The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you? I don't know. What do you think about my policy? I think it is so simple, and I think we spend so much time complicating things. You know, people are entitled to an opinion, but they can have the opinion and the vaccine.
Well, what's happening in Israel is quite interesting because we've heard that the Israeli government has been putting its hands on a lot of vaccines from various suppliers. The latest that we've heard is that the Israeli government has laid claim to 10 million vaccinations from AstraZeneca. So this comes after having acquired 8 million, we understand, rights to 8 million vaccinations from Pfizer, and also we're not quite sure exactly how many from Moderna, but because the Israeli government has been one of the supporters of Moderna from the outset, it seems as if the Israel will be one of the preferred countries to get the Moderna vaccinations. But a recent survey has suggested that a very, very high proportion of Israelis will not wish to have the vaccination. So we're going to have like a whole army of people holding them down, Howard.
But you luckily, you've got an army. You've got a very effective army. And there's conscription in Israel. So I think it, you guys have it relatively simply.
But if we think about it for a moment, I mean, obviously, the vaccination will really help our healthcare system because, the idea of the vaccination, as I understand it, is that people will potentially be carrying the virus and will have the virus, but it won't present symptoms. But ultimately, whoever is going to refuse to have the vaccination will simply have to suffer the consequences themselves. It's not as if though they will necessarily make it different for other people. Other people, those who choose to have the vaccination, will be protected from whatever the consequences and whatever the symptoms are. Those who refuse it will have to, you know, just go through the process of suffering what the symptoms are and potentially endanger their own lives. Now, as I said before, I know that this does put pressure on the healthcare system because those people will inevitably need to be brought into hospitals and need to be treated. But they are just deciding for themselves what their future is rather than affecting everybody else. So do we have the right to hold them down?
Yeah. Look, I think there's two ways you could do it. You either do the hold them down policy, and if you want to be very liberal, I'm prepared to accept that as well. But then they must wear labels saying non-vaccinated, so that if they're coming to an environment where I'm at, I know that they are potentially dangerous, and I want to avoid them at all cost and not have them at my wedding bar mitzvahs.
You don't need to know. Because if you are vaccinated, it doesn't matter whether they're vaccinated.
No, it does. So I spoke to Dr. Myberg about this, and the issue is that they're not really absolutely clear on whether the vaccines will stop you from actually contracting the virus, or it'll just lessen your symptoms. So in other words, if I've had the vaccine and I come in contact with somebody who hasn't been vaccinated and who is ill, I could still potentially become ill, and it can still have some effects. Clive says it sounds like Nazi Germany. Well, except exactly the opposite, because we're trying to save lives. I think it's quite the opposite. I'm not suggesting, Clive, that people who don't get vaccinations wear yellow stars on their sleeves. But I am. I don't know.
A blue square.
Exactly. Something, you know, something like that that makes them stand out.
So it seems as if there's not a common understanding across everybody of exactly what the consequences of not being vaccinated are, because my understanding was slightly different. I'm not a medical specialist, so I don't pretend to be better briefed and in a better situation to understand these things than Dr. Myberg. I do hear that the Moderna vaccine is slightly different, for example, from the Pfizer one or the AstraZeneca one, that they behave in different ways. But my understanding, at least from what I've read, is that once you are vaccinated, you're essentially just protecting yourself from the symptoms. You probably will contract the virus. you probably will have it, but that it just won't present the symptoms and it won't make you ill in the same way. So once you have the virus,
it's definitely something I'm going to put to him to get in more detail, because I think it is a very valid, it is a very valid question. What is the current situation with regard to Israel and COVID-19?
Well, quite a lot of things happening around the edges. First of all, the numbers are spiking at the moment. Our death toll in Israel has now risen to 2,800 people, which obviously is a large number, although still not quite as big as some other countries around the world on a per population basis. But certainly the number of serious cases went up to about 314 yesterday, and then dropped a little bit to 299, but there are currently something like 131 people all in all who are being ventilated. And in spite of the increase in these numbers, the government has decided to push ahead tomorrow with the reopening of grades 5 and 6 for them to return to school, and for grades 11 and 12 to return to school next week. So that's going ahead irrespective of the number spikes. What's interesting in terms of the number of increases in those people who are infected by the virus is how it's split across the population. Ironically, after having had some really, really bad press, the Haredi ultra-Orthodox community has actually seen a real decline in the number of people infected in their particular sector. And now we're seeing that the increases are really concentrated in an Arab sector. So the Arab community really seeing a massive increase, apparently due to illegal weddings, people returning from trips abroad, not going into quarantine. This is the anecdotal evidence that we've been seeing from the Arab community, which is a real shame. I mean, you spoke about people being infected from funerals, but weddings have really been a super spreader. And people who do not adhere to the rules around weddings are really subject to some serious wedding gifts, because unfortunately quite a number of people have died as a result of contracting corona from weddings. There's been an interesting approach in Jerusalem, where the mayor of Jerusalem, Moshe Leon, decided that he wanted to try and get some special dispensation for the city of Jerusalem, and in particular for the areas of the city that are green and orange, to try and convince the Corona cabinet to release some of the serious lockdown that has gone on not only in Jerusalem but elsewhere in Israel, to try and encourage them to allow him to open more schools and to open more shops and to open more shopping malls, but only those areas that are green or orange. And our new coronavirus commissioner has agreed that he would take it to the Corona cabinet for their discussion. So it's going to be interesting to see how that will progress. But unfortunately, at the moment, our numbers are on the increase. And most of the discussion, Howard, as your discussion has really been around the vaccinations and how quickly we can get the vaccines rolled out in Israel.
Mm-hmm. Andrew says getting the vaccine should be a choice, just like your gender. All right, I'm not even going down that rabbit hole. Jonathan Pollard has officially been freed of his restrictions and is now free to travel. This is a big story.
Well, this is a big story for a number of reasons. First of all, there's lots and lots of speculation about what the Jonathan Pollard affair has done for relations between the government of Israel and American Jewry. And some people feel that Israel's continued unwavering support for Jonathan Pollard throughout his entire incarceration period, and indeed thereafter, in the last 5 years when he's been released on parole, has somehow weakened the link between Israel and American Jewry, because the American Jews feel some sort of a dilemma over their allegiance to America, because Jonathan Pollard's situation, where he is, you know, clearly an American citizen, he served in the American military, and yet was passing secret information to Israel. This is a real dilemma for the allegiance, not only of Pollard himself, but indeed of American Jewry, where they feel that it's important that the American Jews show that they are very much aligned with America, that they are loyal to their American nationality, and that Israel shouldn't be come in the way. It shouldn't come in the way of that. And so this has become a major issue. And interestingly, Ehud Olmert has come out publicly saying that he feels that Jonathan Pollard should not come and live in Israel, because we understand from his lawyers and some statements that have come out from the Pollard family that Jonathan and his wife Esther do intend to come to Israel to make Aliyah, to live in Israel. And in fact, the Jewish Agency and various medical facilities in Israel have said that they would welcome the Pollards. We know that Esther is suffering with very, very aggressive breast cancer, and she will need treatment as soon as she comes to Israel, indeed, if that's their case. The Israeli government has continued to support the Pollards throughout this period. In fact, senior Israeli government officials have indeed visited Pollard and Esther during the time that he was in prison. But the whole Pollard story has an element of it that, for me, is still not disclosed. And the element that's not disclosed is what exactly the American government saw as a danger in Pollard during the time that he was in prison for 30-odd years. No other spy of a friend that has passed information to a friendly nation has sat in jail and has been treated in the way that Jonathan Pollard was treated. And so I still have the question to ask as to why. What went on behind the scenes that we still don't know about? I think that there's a lot more to come out about the story yet.
I think so too. Another Israeli judoka has won a gold medal in the European Championship. This is amazing Israel's success in this field.
Absolutely. This time it's Peter Palchik who won the gold medal in the under 100 kilogram category on the last day of the European Judo Championships that were being held in Prague over the weekend. This time he defeated Russia's Armen Adamyan, who was actually last year's winner. And it was quite exciting because their competition went the full 4 minutes without any points being scored on either side. And then it had to go to kind of an overtime situation where Peter Palchik managed to get a Wazari to secure the win and take the gold medal. So that was very, very exciting indeed. Peter Palchik has previously been successful in winning, I think last time around he won a bronze medal in the 2018 European Championships that were held in Tel Aviv. And he is in good nick now to go to the Tokyo Olympics that are set to take place in July next year. And we hope that he, alongside many other members of the Israeli judo team who have done so well up until now, will make that pay, will show, you know, that their fitness can be translated into medals in the Olympic competition. So we wish them luck. Peter Palchik has gone through quite some difficult times in his life, and he was really praised. He was called by President Ruvi Rivlin, who congratulated him publicly, and also the member of Knesset, Yoel Razborov, who is a Yesh Atid Telem member of Knesset, and a former judoka himself who represented Israel at the Olympic Games, who came out publicly to congratulate Peter Palchik on his gold medal, not only to Peter, but of course to the Israeli team who've been doing so well. We hope that the success will continue.
Incredible that Israel has had such success in this field. Really amazing. We've only got a few seconds left, but just tell us very quickly about a rocket fired from Gaza.
Well, yeah, this rocket was fired on Saturday evening. Unfortunately, landed on a storage facility in Ashkelon. No injuries were reported, although obviously damage was caused to this storage facility in Ashkelon. Speculation as to why the rocket would have been fired, how come it was that Iron Dome didn't intercept the rocket. And by the way, when we see rockets like this, a single rocket fired does damage. Iron Dome, for whatever reason, wasn't able to intercept the rocket on this occasion. It shows what life could be like if we didn't have Iron Dome at all. We're lucky enough that Iron Dome does intercept most of these rockets and keep us safe. But once in a while, the system does fail. It does have its technical limitations. And unfortunately, we see the damage and the potential threat that could be caused from these rockets. Speculation is that the increase of coronavirus in the Gaza Strip was the cause of this. This was a message sent out to say, we need ventilators, and we need to come to some sort of an understanding about getting some more medical facilities into Gaza. I'm not quite sure how true that speculation really is. Israel has been cooperative in allowing as much medical facilities and medical equipment to go into Gaza as is necessary. So I'm not quite sure that these rockets are necessarily required, but maybe it was a call for help. I'm not quite sure. Mm. We're just very lucky and grateful that nobody was injured in the process.
Absolutely right. It is 8:01. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, we'll catch you with the Israel Report tomorrow morning, once again at 7:45.